Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yo, yo, it's Chris Webby, and you are tuned into The Jake Brown Show.
And welcome to The Jake Brown Show on radio.com, iTunes, and Spotify at Jake Brown Radio and at Jake Brown Show. You can find us on social media. Joining us now is a guy for a brief time was a member of the Pride, I guess, after the Flying Dutchman days. And he is from the 203 CT. If you guys know, I went to Hofstra 09 to 13 and lived in Trumbull, Connecticut from 98 to 08. It's rapper Chris Webby. Webby, what's going on, man?
Yo, yo, how you doing, man?
Doing well. And of course, we had to do the interview on a Wednesday. That was the only requirement for the interview because of the new album. Wednesday.
Indeed.
That's out now. You can get it on iTunes, Spotify. I guess I like to say wherever music is sold.
Give it away for free on SoundCloud because, you know, at the end of the day, about people bumping the music, you know? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And you want them showing
up. I prefer a stream.
Yeah.
You know?
You gotta go to the stream. That's where the money's at. And you want people coming out to the shows. And I listen to the album. I love it top to bottom. And what's interesting about your music is, I guess the beats you use and the sampling that you do is so unique to other rappers. Talk about that to me, and I guess with your producer and the beats that you guys put together and how you come up with them and how you come up with the certain samples and everything.
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes it is simply as standard as I'll get a beat sent over from one of the small handful of producers that I mess with and pretty much take it as is. And just like, wow, this is dope. I'm going to do a song to this ASAP. A lot of times I either cherry pick a sample and bring it to them, or sometimes we'll literally go and sit down with them with an idea and we'll work it out together. My main producer I've been using is JP on the track, who's actually an 18-year-old kid from Connecticut who
really
is just incredible. I've been working with him for a couple of years now, and he's already, you know, completely exceeded where he was when I first met him, and he's super dope. So, for example, like one of the songs, Friend Like Me, I one day had the Genie song from Aladdin stuck in my head all day. Like, I was singing it out loud while I was driving. I was whistling it. Couldn't get it out of my fucking head. So I went to his house, and I basically explained to him, yo, how do we make a song out of the Genie song? How do we make this a beat? And we didn't sample it, but he recreated certain melodies and, you know, added all his own little touches. And then I took just a little bit of flair from that with the catch line, like, you ain't never had a friend like me. And then worked around that. And, you know, that's how that particular song came to be. So there's a lot of different ways to go about it, but I've always had a sweet spot for samples. I love samples. A lot of my favorite songs were samples. You know, I grew up listening to Dipset and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was very sample heavy. And I think it's an important part of hip hop that has now gotten a little crazy because, you know, the money's dried up in the industry quite a bit and gets a little harder to clear samples. Or if you don't clear samples, someone might come for your head. But, you know, hip hop has always had samples, you know.
And it's interesting you mentioned that, and you see it like with Wild Thoughts with DJ Khaled sampling that the Santana beat on there.
Yeah.
And you got, that's something you have to clear because that's so obvious that he just completely took it.
Absolutely. And he, you know, he is on a different level of exposure by leaps and bounds. So, I mean, when you are an artist that big, Eminem, you know, like, he's got to clear everything. I try to clear everything. Sometimes, you know, if it's super obscure or whatever, you know. I can only play as fair as I can. I'm an independent artist, you know what I mean? Sometimes people try to hit you over the head, too.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you could go ask someone to clear the sample, and they can just say no. And then you just have a song recorded.
Now, has that happened to you before? Have you had experience?
It has.
So you have
it's
songs
really
just in
fucking
the,
annoying.
You have songs just laying around that no one's heard that you couldn't get cleared?
I do have a few, yeah. I mean, that's what's nice about mixtapes, though, you know. But at the same time, because you can go sample crazy with mixtapes. No one's really going to give you a hard time because you're not directly profiting, in a sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They can try to complicate and be like, well, if you perform these, you're generating revenue. But no one's really going to come after you for that. But at the same time, you know, you just, for someone to say no after you recorded a song, like, the mixtape era is almost no more, you mm-hmm. know? Nobody's really going on Dat Piff, so it's like, I don't know what to do with some of these songs now, you know? I could mm-hmm. put them out. Or you can, like, try to reinterpolate the sample. But it's just very obnoxious. Clearing samples is a headache, especially on an independent level, because, you know, I run an independent business. And, mm-hmm. you know, I have a guy who clears the samples, but it's really all coming out of my pocket. So, you know, pretty much everything that is done in the Chris Webby organization has to pass through me to go anywhere, which is a good thing. And mm-hmm. it didn't used to be that way, but I had to grow up and really take the reins of my organization in order to stay alive in the changing climate, you know?
And it's interesting you mentioned Friend Like Me. That song is in my head probably every day. Aladdin's my favorite movie ever. And I became friendly with the guy who played Genie in Aladdin on Broadway, James Monroe Igohart, and now he's in Hamilton. Literally the only step
nice.
Above you could
I've
get from Genie.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen anything on Broadway.
You have to see Aladdin.
Lion King on my bucket list, because I'm obviously a huge Lion King fan mm-hmm. as well.
You have
Disney
to see Aladdin,
really
yeah.
all around. I'm a big Disney fan.
Yeah, I mean, if you got to see Lion King and Aladdin. I still haven't seen Lion King just because it's such a tough ticket, and I'm not trying to pay a ton. But those are
and
two must-sees.
Not going anywhere, so.
Exactly, yeah. Chris Webby really? Joining us. Follow him on Twitter, at Chris Webby. Take me back to the Hofstra days. We talked about it a little before. How that changed you. I actually was hanging out with a friend who also got kicked out of Hofstra after his freshman year. So it made me think of you. And take us through that time and how it kind of changed the course of your career and starting to get into rap back in 2009, 2008.
No doubt. So, I mean, I had been rapping for a long time. At this point, I've been rapping about, I would estimate it, 18, 19 years. You know, I started rapping in middle school from, like, the rap battle forums and, you know, just, like, freestyling in high school at parties and, you know, on blunt rides. It's always been something I've done. I used to go, you know, junior, senior year of high school into school with, like, a little shoebox full of old mixtapes, you know, stuff that nobody's heard. Old stuff sounds really terrible, but, you know, just getting my footing and kind of figuring out who I am as an artist. So when I got to Hofstra, it was a whole new environment for me. It was a whole new group of people to impress. And, you know, there were already a bunch of people who kind of, you know, they were known as the rappers around campus. And I went in pretty aggressively with a mindset where it's like, I'm going to destroy all of them and be the one. You know what I mean? Which is, you know, rap's a competitive thing. Being a white rapper in that time period as well makes it gives you almost kind of a complex. I don't think it's like that anymore because there's so many white rappers that it's really not a – I feel like they don't go through the same intensive hatred, so to speak, that I did. You know, back then it was like, oh, you ain't Eminem. You ain't Eminem. And obviously I'm not the greatest, you know, in my opinion, of all time. So to have that as the only reference point coming up, and usually being in freestyle cyphers where I'm the only white guy, I had to be really good, and I had to be really the best if anyone was going to pay any attention to me. So it gives you a bit of a complex in that sense. So when I got to Hofstra, yeah, I battled everybody who said they were rappers at all the parties. Within the first couple weeks, I had destroyed all of them in front of groups of people that the word kind of spread around. I made friends with some of them, too. You know, there were some alliances, but then there were just some straight annihilations. And sooner than later, I was pretty much just the guy who was rapping at all the parties. And it was pretty dope. I mean, like, I remember being at Dizzy's, like, Dizzy Lizard.
Dizzy Lizard, rest in peace.
A bar that you could get into, which is insane how that even works. But, you know, we were kids there, and my friends would, like, when kids would come from out of town, when some, like, local Hempstead people would be in the bar, like, they would, like, my friend Matt Lavoti especially, like, he would kind of, like, trick people into battling me and kind of just, like, be a ringer, have them put a little money on it, and I would just destroy them, and we would buy drinks with whatever we just won, you know?
Yeah, and if you start off at Nachos, you get penny beers on Wednesdays. You kind of elevated.
It started there.
Yeah, it started at Nachos. Then you graduated Dizzy's. Once you graduated Dizzy's, you went to McKeeb's at 19. And then after McKeeb's is Bar Social, which is now like a dumpling spot or some Chinese food spot, unfortunately.
And at
Social
the same time, as much as like I was doing this, and you know, at that point, my freestyle abilities were, that's what I was doing all the time. So I would even go as far as saying I was probably a better straight freestyler back then than I am even right now, because that's all I used to do. Like 24/7. And There were still a lot of people who didn't like me, though. Mm-hmm. You know, there were still a lot of people like, oh, look at this clown, you know, rapping everywhere, you know. And then I got one of the hot sorority girls, you know, was dating her, made some people mad. So, like, I was a very interesting person at Hofstra. You know, there were a lot of people who supported and were intrigued with what I was doing. There were a lot of people that hated on it. And a lot of those people who did hate it on it turned out to be, you know, supporters once they saw that I actually was following through with it and, you know, mm-hmm. making a career out of it. It's hard to convince people sometimes. People make judgments. It's just human nature. And that's been one of the biggest battles of my career as a whole, mm-hmm. you know?
Crazy times at Hofstra. And if you didn't know, I am actually a fellow rapper myself, a fellow freestyler.
No doubt. None
to the extent of you. And we made a song called Welcome to the Hof. It was a theme song for Hofstra. Welcome to My Hood remix. We did not get the beat cleared and we did not collect any money. But those were the glory days and the walks to Dutch Treats and the freestyles to Dutch Treats and Kate and Willie's walking there.
Wow, dude, you're throwing out some
classics.
Names,
the sampler.
I forgot about some of this stuff.
Oh,
it's been a long time.
Yeah, it feels like yesterday, but now it's, what, 2017, so it's been, oh, man, it's been 8 years since freshman year, and it feels like yesterday. And the Kate and Willie sampler was always the go-to after a night out of debauchery. And parties were always getting closed off by cops at, like, 11 o'clock. The cops would always come to frat
and that's
parties.
That was one of the worst parts about it, because I feel like house parties are an essential element to a college experience.
For sure, yeah.
And while we did have some crazy house parties, it seemed like less and less, even by the time I left, and I was only there a couple years, because it almost seemed like the bars wanted the business. So they were, like, calling the cops on the parties and getting them shut down, so everyone ended up at the bars. So as fun as it was at first to be at the bars, it became very redundant and repetitive. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, we're just going to go get blacked out at the bar again. And, you know, in the winter, it's cold. You end up getting Popeyes on the walk back and regretting it extensively. Like,
oh, man, the good old Popeyes days. Grab a couple biscuits. Yeah, they would always close. The frat were closing. Like, all right, we're going to McKeeb's, I guess, or we're going to Social.
And that sucked.
Yeah.
That sucked. And that was part of, like, you know, having frat houses and college houses in normal neighborhoods, mm-hmm. you know. I understand why the neighbors would get pissed off, you know, it's completely reasonable, but it was a little dicey having the mix of college parties and, you know, just normal members of society next to them when those, because some of those parties I recall were absolutely insane.
Oh, yeah. And it's, I would always get texts. Now, the last couple of years I was there, just someone got robbed, someone got shot on Front Street, something happened every week.
It was crazy because, like, the neighborhood obviously, you know, wasn't the best. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just a bunch of drunk college kids walking around at night, you know. There were some issues people ran into, for sure.
Chris Webby on the Jake Brown Show. The album is Wednesday. It's out now. When you get compared, Chris, to other rappers, I mean, people may throw out, like, a Mac Miller comparison. What is your feeling when you do get a comparison? Do you find yourself, like, you're your own guy and you don't like it? Are you honored by it? Like, what's your going through your head?
Well, I mean, I think it depends. I think a Mac Miller comparison is strictly a visual one.
Yeah,
we're both white. Like, if you listen to our music, they do sound very different.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what the comparison is. Some of them, you know, it's not even necessarily that I would be offended. I would just be like, I don't sound like that. You know what I mean? It's just not accurate as someone who studies music and knows my music and their music. I don't see it. But, you know, when I do get the Eminem comparisons, for example, that's an honor because obviously, you know, he's incredible. And I've taken a lot of pages out of his book in mm-hmm. terms of forming my style, along with many other artists. So it's not like an Eminem jack. It's just like some songs sound a little Eminem-y for sure, you know, but I've taken page out of a lot of people's books. That's what being a rapper is. You study various people when you're coming up, and you take certain plays out of their various playbooks and form your own style, you know? So there's flashes of various different artists in various different songs, you know? It's about trying to stay inspired and listening to good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I pretty much only listen, when it comes to hip-hop, I pretty much only listen to hip-hop from, like, the late 90s, early 2000s. Like, I don't listen to almost anything new.
So you're not blasting Migos or anything right now?
Not at all. Not at all. And, you know, it's not like I don't hear the songs that are extremely popular. They're pretty unavoidable, but
mm-hmm.
I think that me not listening to that shit keeps my style pure. And I'm not influenced by the trends in fad.
Yeah.
I'm not interested by them, first off. Like, a lot of people, you know, they want to mimic what's popular in order to, you know, make a buck. I don't care about that. I want my music to be dope. So it's almost like I explained it this way to someone the other day. It's like I'm a species that evolved and is continuing to evolve on an island. Like, I am adapting and adjusting my own way to my own setting and not being influenced by whatever's happening on the mainland. You know, like, I'm like a fucking Tasmanian devil or something. You know, there's nothing like me anywhere else because, like, I'm not seeing what's going on elsewhere. I'm adapting to my own setting, and I'm choosing the music that I listen to, and it's the same stuff that's going to keep my music dope. You know, I listen to a lot of stuff that's not rap too, you know?
And I think that's what makes you unique and your style and how you do it different. You're not talking about the chains and the club and the strippers.
Yeah, because that shit is whack. Like, I mean, yeah. I get it, though. People have always done that. I'm not going to write someone off because that's what they're talking about, but I will write them off if they're trash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm very opinionated, and I get that at times can be a turnoff for certain people too, but like, if no one speaks up and calls out the bullshit that's going on, it's going to perpetuate and continue. And I'm not saying I'm going to be the one to change the game, but like, I'm one voice of many necessary voices if we want hip hop to boomerang back in the right direction. Because a lot of the greats that really formed the hip-hop that we loved growing up are no longer active or as relevant or as good as they once were. Mm-hmm. And we need a new generation to really help it because it's going in a bad direction. And, you know, I speak out against mumble rap pretty frequently. And it's not that I hate mumble rap. It's not that I don't think there's a place for it. I used to listen to the big timers, you know, like, not lyrical rap, but like, you need music like that for certain settings. But it's taken over entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and, you know, when J. Cole and Kendrick are the only two quote-unquote lyrical rappers that some people can name off the top of their head, we're in a weird spot in hip-hop, you know? And I think people need to talk about, you know? Like, and I have no problem offending people. Not at all.
Who do you think's the greatest rapper alive?
I would say Eminem off his accomplishments in the beginning part of his career.
Mm-hmm. Was Eminem your biggest inspiration? Like, who inspired you to get into rap?
He was. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. I mean, some of it literally is as simple as when I was first coming up, like, no one really understood that a white dude could rap. Mm-hmm. You know, no one had ever seen it. So, like, I loved hip-hop, but I didn't think it was something that was going to be accessible to me. Seeing him and how good he was and how he broke all those barriers off of his skill set was, you know, and completely eye-opening and allowed me to be like, holy shit, I can do this too. And I'm sure there's a ton of white rappers like me who had that same epiphany at the same time, who have grown into whoever they've grown into. But, you know, there's some other greats. I mean, Jay-Z's got to be in that conversation. And he's grown really well. Like, he's transitioned into who he is today very smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like every album he's ever done, but, I mean, there's no doubt about the fact that he's incredible and consistent, you know. And funny story is my favorite song of all time is Renegade with the two of them. So.
Yeah, there you go. It doesn't get much better than that.
No.
Chris Webby joining us. You've done a lot of collabs with people on the new album. You have one with Justina Valentine, who I've had on the show before.
Oh, dope.
Obviously, easy on the eyes, Justina. And now she's killing it with Wildin' Out. Who are some of the best collabs and the best artists that you've worked with throughout your career?
I mean, I've worked with some legends, which is very cool. You know, I have a track with Prodigy, R.I.P. Got a track with Method Man, Bun B, Tech N9ne, which for me was really huge as an independent artist. And then for that track, you know, he's on my album, Chemically Imbalanced, for that track to lead to him asking me to go on tour with him and being his main opener on a 50-city tour. You know, I would say Tech N9ne is also one of my biggest influences for different reasons, but another incredibly consistent. And his career path is just so impressive and inspiring to me. You know, he is the total product of just don't give up if you have a fan base, just keep fucking going, and people will recognize eventually, you know?
Yeah.
And if people don't, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Tech Nine's still making a shitload of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tech Nine goes
He's
hard.
Like, he goes to show that you don't need everybody.
Yeah. Take us through, Chris, the independent route. Is it, like, more difficult, the pros and the cons of not joining a label?
Now, I think I am so hard-headed and stubborn that mm-hmm. I don't know if I would ever fit in well with a label. I'm so uninterested in what the trends and you know, current patterns are in music that I would never fit in on a label, as I was saying before. You know, they want a hit. I'm not concerned with a hit. There were points in my career where I was trying to have a hit, but, you know, it never was my main goal. Now I really don't give a fuck because mm-hmm. I don't need that. That will not define me. I'd rather have a consistent body of work and have my fans and make sure that they're happy, because if they're not happy, then I'm fucked.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the independent route is extremely difficult. It's extremely frustrating. It's extremely disappointing. There are so many times where you literally, like, I try to explain it to people, but, like, you know, this career path that I chose is full of some of the highest highs, because when the stars do align and you have one of those moments, you know that you earned it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But the lows are deep. It can be very frustrating to put in so much work, to have so many people say that your music is so much better than all of this stuff that's extremely popular, and still not get the recognition, not even half of the recognition that you think you deserve, you know? The reinvesting of the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I make a good amount of money, but running an independent rap career is extremely expensive. And, you know, I have to reinvest all the time, like, constantly. Like, the majority of what comes in goes back out still, you know? And I'm hoping that it kind of, like, passes that hump this year, and I believe it will with all the projections that we're making.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still been at a point where it's like a lot of what comes in goes, like, directly back out. Or I no longer am trying to compete with the big dudes and, you know, make these crazy visuals and, you know, put all this time and energy into the music and the promotion of the music. And I could sit on more money and you know, buy a house, buy a car, whatever. Mm. I mean, I have a car, but, you know, I could buy a new one. But that's not important to me. Mm. You know, what's important to me is my legacy. And I think that used to be important to a lot of rappers, and I feel like legacy and integrity have really fallen on the list of what's important to MCs in the game today.
Yeah, and I think it's important, you talked about not worrying about making a hit and making the song that's going to end up on the radio and being loyal to your fan base. I think you have a unique fan base and a loyal fan base, especially in Connecticut. Like, does part of you feel like you kind of got Connecticut on your shoulders? Because, I mean, I lived there. I have a lot of friends there. I have a lot of friends who listen to you as well. And, I mean, I feel like you got the state on your back, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's been that way for a bit. Not to say that there aren't other artists in Connecticut that are super dope.
There's not many, though, ones that we've heard
not
of.
Not many, and I've been very vocal about Connecticut in particular. So while there may be certain other artists from Connecticut, I've been extremely vocal about representing Connecticut. You know, like, I have it tattooed across my chest. I have 203 tattooed down my rib cage. I mention Connecticut frequently in music. So people from other parts of the country that know nothing about Connecticut, some people don't even know it's a state. Mm-hmm. They associate Chris Webby with Connecticut first and foremost, you know? So it is crazy. And I do have this huge fan base here. I mean, I've been doing the Toads Play show every Black Friday, and it's, you know, it's sold out every year, and, you know, reminds me of the hometown support that I have. But at the same time, I would say there's no state where I have more hate against me as well. So, you know, it's a real mixed bag in Connecticut. Obviously, there is the support, but there's a lot of jealousy. And, you know, there's certain other hip-hop artists in Connecticut that feel like I am misrepresenting Connecticut because of where I'm from, being from the more suburban side of things. And giving my
point jealousy,
of view,
yeah.
Which, you know, I keep it very real to what my life is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just do the only thing that I know how to do. You know, I'm not trying to be anybody that I'm not. I rap exceptionally well, in my personal opinion. And, mm-hmm. you know, there are still some people who, you know, the problem is I have a lot of songs. I've been around for a long time. People could have made their judgment about me at any point in my career by hearing one song. And I'm not saying every song I've ever made was good. So that opinion will stay the same opinion until they actually sit down and listen to a newer Chris Webby project. And a lot of people don't want to do that. They have me written off in their head already. So until we literally force it down their throat and put something out that people are absolutely forced to listen to, a lot of people's opinions will remain the same. But with this new project, I've been seeing a lot of people tweet and comment and say, you know, I used to think you were something that you have just proven that you're not, you know?
Yeah, and it's showing. I mean, it was on the top five rap iTunes charts for albums, which is very impressive.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're proud of that. A couple more minutes with Chris Webby. Where do you see yourself in your, like, where are you at in your career right now? It's been about a decade since you started this. Where do you, like, is there a position you see yourself at right now?
I think this year was the beginning of my second go at all of this. In the end of 2015, I ended up splitting with management. The behind-the-scenes part of my career was in absolute shambles, and I realized that I had to really change the way I was living. And it wasn't about the party. The party needs to stop, and it needs to get serious because I do love hip-hop. But I got a little carried away with myself. You know, any kid who reaches some sort of success on that first go-around, you're going to get a little carried away and be having a good time. I was always consistent with the music, but I realized that I had to really buckle down. And this year, I would say, is the beginning of Chris Webby 2.0. This is the beginning of people really recognizing me as the lyricist that I am, as the, like, intelligent member of society that I am. And, you know, I got an opinion. And I also, you know, I used to have a manager who would oftentimes tell me, hey, like, maybe don't say that, you know, maybe don't talk about that guy or this guy. I don't have that manager anymore. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to talk about people. I'm going to talk about politicians. I'm going to talk about MCs that I don't like. I'm going to talk about anybody that I feel like talking about if I think that they deserve to be talked about in a negative light. And I think that people need voices like that, the Michael Rapaports of the world, you know, like people who will just say what needs to be said. And I have an interesting way of doing it where I can make it part of a musical production. And that gives a little extra punch to it. So I think people are going to see me for who I always have been going forward. I just didn't do the best way of displaying it. And that's on me, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. You said this last year was kind of like part two. It's an interesting way to look around it. I mean, it's been 9-10 years. You're talking about the roasting guys. I mean, Raw Thoughts 1 and 2. I mean, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin Spacey's in his grave right now, just rolling over.
Yeah.
Oh man, one was rough.
That is honestly fun for me too, because, you know, to double back on what we were talking about before, how when I first got to Hofstra and battling people, I realized that I'm not a battle rapper. Like, that is a completely different type of thing. Those people memorize, you know, upwards of 10 minutes of bars and spit them a cappella at an opponent while another opponent battles them. And it's very high anxiety. And I realized that I wasn't really cut out for that. But I do realize that my foray with that style has given me the ability to be able to shit on people in a very, like, comical. I watch a lot of battle rap, you know, like, I love it. And I think I'll be able to incorporate it in my own ways and kind of use it as the voice of morality in, you know, the general conversation of humanity, which, you know, not to say like, oh, I'm going to save everything with my voice, but like, I'm going to talk some shit and some people have it coming, you know?
What are your, yeah, I hear you there. What are your interests, especially today, and everyone's roasting Trump left and right. It's just too easy at this point, and Clinton and everything. So at this point, I mean, what else are you interested in? What else do you see yourself doing when rap is done? What interests you?
Man, it's hard to say. It's hard to say. But I think I'm going to excel as an older rapper more than I did as a younger one, which is usually flip-flops. Usually an artist in their 20s loses it by the time they're in their 30s because their style was young and it doesn't transition well into maturity. I think I'm going to do better as a mature rapper, and I'm not saying that it will last forever because being a rapper does not make you a member of the Rolling Stones. We are not going to be touring in our 60s. Maybe some of us, but it's a young man's sport. But you can ride it out through your 30s. And I think my style and everything that I'm doing and saying is going to translate a lot better now that I've matured as well. So I think, you know, I think I still got a long stretch ahead of me hip-hop wise. And, you know, I'd love to get into acting. I'd love to do a lot of shit. I want to do a lot of environmental work as well. You know, I'm with this company, 1% for the Planet, that donates 1% of my annual earnings to environmental causes. So this year I did that and added some extra money on because, you know, I'm passionate about the environment in general. And I donated to rangers in East Africa who protect, you know, the elephants, rhinos, lions, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they reached out. I actually have a call with them today. And, you know, they were talking about bringing me out to Africa. I would that's my passion deeper than hip hop. That's what I cared about before I even discovered what hip hop was. I was the kid who I would see a forest get cut down next to my old condo in Norwalk and be like, who decided to cut this forest down? I wish I could find them and cut off their balls. That's a direct quote from a 6-year-old Chris Webby. That's how passionate I am about just nature, the animals, and how twisted and fucked up humanity is and how much we destroy everything we touch. And I think there isn't a voice for that in hip hop, but even beyond hip hop, that's something I see myself doing for the rest of my days, you know?
I hear you. That's interesting. That's unique. Wednesday is out now on iTunes, Spotify. Go get it. Chris Webby, at Chris Webby on Twitter. Now you're going to be in Australia coming up, correct?
Yes, very soon. And on the environmental side, dude, I'm so psyched to see kangaroos and koalas and whatnot for the first time. Like, this is going to be dope. I'm very excited. This is my first time really touring overseas, too, which is crazy. You know, I've toured Canada, and I've done the U.S. more times than I could count, but I've definitely never been to Australia.
Do you plan on, are you doing a tour here in New York, Connecticut soon?
I did, towards the end of the year, I did like a little East Coast run, and I did a little Midwest run last year, but I'll definitely be doing another U.S. tour this year, just trying to figure out the best way to go about it, because I've toured myself many times. Mm-hmm. I know what I can do. I know who I can bring out. You know, new people come every time, but at the same time, I'd love to partner up with another MC, you know, and split the pot, you know, and split the fans.
You did a show with Justina, right, at one point?
Oh, yeah. I brought her out opening for me, you know, several years ago, and then I actually just brought her out on this past tour as well.
Yeah,
Justina's the shit.
She's dope.
Close with her for a long time. She's on the project. She did some background vocals on some of the songs too. Like she's a homie.
She goes, I'm just a weirdo. She's got that voice or the redhead as well. Chris Webby, Hofstra, CT. Appreciate you coming on the show, man. And when you come to New York, I'll definitely be coming out.
No doubt, man. I'll see you there.
All right, man. Take care.
Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.